You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It's been 9 years since Jeffrey Eugenides won the Pulitzer Prize for his last novel, Middlesex, and his readers had wondered what he would do next. Well, he published a new novel this fall called The Marriage Plot, a modern love story that follows three characters, Madeline, Leonard, and Mitchell, who meet at Brown University and, after graduating in 1982, search for where they belong in the world and who they belong with. Listeners told us how much they enjoyed our conversation, and we are re-airing it for you today on this long holiday week. I started by noting that one of the characters, Madeline Hanna, is writing her senior thesis on the marriage plot in novels by Jane Austen and George Eliot for a lit course, and I asked Jeffrey Eugenides, was that the same basic plot for much of 18th and 19th century British fictions up through Henry James?
Marriage is the great subject of the novel, and if you date it from Jane Austen, it was the basic plot. It changes from the beginning. Jane Austen's books are comedies. They end with weddings, and usually they involve a young woman finding the proper husband and inheritance and all of that. But then as the 19th century progresses, you get into James, where you follow the heroine into her marriage and the difficulties after that. And obviously Anna Karenina is a great novel about marriage.
Madame Bovary
as well. So they get darker and they become less comedic over the 100 years.
Still, in writing about the marriage plot, isn't she going against the academic trend of the time by writing about traditional literature in this way?
Well, she's conflicted. I mean, the novel really began with the sentence. It's, I think, page 19 or 20 in the printed book. Madeline's love troubles began at a time when the French theory she was reading deconstructed the very notion of love. So she's a woman who's reading her first French theory. She's becoming skeptical about romance, and yet at the same time she's falling in love. So she's caught between both modernity and tradition.
Semiotics and deconstructionist theorists like Derrida and Barthes were the rage at the time. I don't know if they still are.
They are. Well,
you're teaching
they were. They were really in the rage when I went to college, because it was 1978 when I first got to college, and there were a lot of older professors who were new critics and taught in the same way they had for about 30 years. And then there was this new cohort who were bringing in Barthes, Derrida, and they were having a pitched battle in the English department. It finally led to the creation of the semiotics program. So I was witnessing all that as a kid or as a student.
I want to go back to something you said. You started with that sentence, and now it's on page 19.
Right.
But that was the thing that got you
even
going?
Even worse than that, I was writing another novel, and I had about 120 pages before I hit that sentence that is now 19 of this book. So there's many, many pages I had to throw away, an entire other novel, really, in order to get the marriage plot written.
So you were in the middle of writing a book, or at least at the beginning of writing a book, and suddenly realized that that's not the book you wanted to write, but there was another book that was leading you to?
Yeah, well, appropriately for a book called The Marriage Plot, this book began with an act of literary adultery. I was working on Middlesex, and I wasn't sure where the relationship was headed. I began to feel a little bit frustrated, and I put it aside, and I started another novel, which was very different from Middlesex. Seemed easier to be with, nicely proportioned. And I worked on that for about a month until I began to realize that that was going to be just as demanding as my spouse. And so I finally went back to Middlesex and finished it. But when
it was
done... And
we're totally grateful that you did.
Well, thank you. But when I was finally done, I went back to that novel that was about 120 pages, worked on it for a couple of years, and then started writing about one of the characters, Madeline, who had a difficult boyfriend. And that story took off and turned into The Marriage Plot, but I had to throw away everything previous to that.
Now, a lot of writers will write short stories as a break from the novel that's keeping them involved.
I do that.
Oh, because here you're writing a novel as a break from your novel.
And I also published stories just to have something, in print.
One of Madeline's professors says that gender equality and divorce and prenuptial agreements have wrecked the marriage plot in literature. Was that something any of your college professors argued?
I don't remember them arguing that. I put that argument as a little bit reactionary. I recognize that. So I put it in the mouth of her dear old professor, who's a little bit stuck in his theoretical ways. But it is true enough, I think.
Was this around the time when the idea that the traditional novel was dead or passé? Was that popular when you were in college?
It was popular to say that, you know, the author is dead and there's no way to write narrative fiction anymore. And I wanted to be a writer at a young age, so hearing that the author was dead, you know, that was a little problematic for me, since that's what I hoped to be, and I was already dead. So.
Even writers of fiction, V.S. Naipaul, says now that most interesting writing is nonfiction because the novel is ill-suited for dealing with the big issues of the day.
Well, if he was my age, he might still think he had a few books in him.
Do you share Madeline's skepticism of semiotics and the new criticism? Or did you when you were in school?
I'm a little bit more down with the program than Madeline was. I took semiotics. I learned a lot from it. I've been influenced by it in all my books. But I also had a resistance to some of the more doctrinaire portions of it. The idea that you couldn't actually say anything meaningful. I didn't believe that.
Well, the whole urge to write fiction is to say something relevant and meaningful, isn't it?
It is for me. It is creating clarity from confusion. Some people like to embrace the confusion and say it's verisimilitude, but it's not how I feel.
Madeline meets Leonard Bankhead in her Semiotics 211 class. She signed on for it to find out what everyone's talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, I was concerned about the fact that you named this very troubled character Leonard.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, but you know, he is not called Lenny at all.
No, well, neither am I. But he
you know, I thought your friends called you Lenny.
My friends call me Leonard. The people who don't know me call me Lenny.
Oh, okay.
At
least he's not Italian. Am I wrong about that, too?
What?
At least he doesn't have an Italian name.
My name is Russian.
Oh, no.
She becomes obsessed with Roland Barthes' Lover's Discourse, which they've read in class. Why does it speak to her so strongly?
Pardon me?
Why does Roland Barthes' Lover's Discourse...
Oh, because the great thing about that book is... You know, it's supposed to anatomize love. You're to read it and realize what an illusion romantic love is and free yourself from it. And yet I think most people who read The Lover's Discourse feel themselves actually, thinking about their own amorous troubles. And you read it when you're brokenhearted. So the great thing about Barthes is he has a literary manner about, you know, writing deconstructionist prose. And you can read that book almost as a novel in itself.
Was it fun writing about literary theory in a novel?
I found it fun. I mean, it's just the beginning of the book, and the whole book certainly isn't about semiotic theory.
But it is about how people apply it. It's like people who take psych courses and then immediately start applying what they are learning in the class to their own private lives. They often start wondering whether they're crazy. In this case, Barth kind of ruins her relationship with Leonard, at least at the start. She tells him she loves him for the first time, and she gets a response she would prefer not to get.
She does. She gets hoisted on her own petard, because if you're reading Barth, you're supposed to not be a sap for love, and yet she is. So when he points that out, he is, you know, telling her perhaps she shouldn't even be so enthusiastic about the semiotic theorist she's reading.
He's bipolar or manic depressive, as it was called then. Yeah. Some reviewers have pointed out similarities between Leonard and the writer David Foster Wallace. Was that intentional?
No, it wasn't. I think a lot is being read into the fact that he has a bandana. The bandana actually comes from Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses. But when I create a character, I put lots of people into that character and a lot of myself. So there's bits and pieces of lots of people. But it's not a roman a clay at all, this book. It'd be the wrong way to read it.
Although many people are reading you into the other man in Madeline's life, Mitchell Grammaticus, a friend since freshman year. He sees Leonard as a rival, but she really doesn't feel romantically attached to him. But he shares a lot in common with you.
Well, you could
Greek
read
background.
Yes,
comes
true.
From Detroit.
True. He does.
You goes could, to India.
Yeah, you could read a lot of me into all of these characters, because I can't write a character without endowing them with my thoughts and often my memories. Mitchell has the most surface resemblance to me. I plead guilty to that, though he was the hardest character to write for that very reason.
He travels to Europe and then to India, where he volunteers with Mother Teresa. Yep. Did you actually?
I did. I did volunteer for Mother Teresa, way back when.
And did you have the same kind of difficulty getting over squeamishness about all the sickness?
I did. It was not an easy place to work. My first few days there, I was very proud of myself just because I got through them. And I was had a lot of trepidation about it. You saw a lot of disease and some ghastly maladies and wounds. But then after feeling as though I was stronger than I thought, I began to realize how difficult it would be to do this, not for a few days, but for your whole life, as the nuns were doing. And at that point, a wave of sadness hit me at my inability to be the kind of good person that I was trying to be.
It's hard to be a saint.
It's very hard to be a saint.
Jeffrey Eugenides' latest book is The Marriage Plot. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Drew, and it's quite realistic in the way that novels were before postmodernism, deconstruction, and semiotics. And that was obviously something that you did very consciously.
Well, the book works on two levels, I think. I mean, it works as a marriage plot, and it also isn't a marriage plot. I think it draws a lot from tradition, but it's not averse to modernity at all. It's a contemporary novel. If it was a real marriage plot, I wouldn't have told it from three points of view. It wouldn't have the ending it has and many other aspects.
You do capture the 1980s Ivy League college experience very well. And you teach at Princeton now, don't you?
I do.
Is college very different now than it was 30 years ago?
Well, it's different because I'm teaching in a college instead of enjoying myself and learning. I can't tell how different it is. It seems to be a little bit more about getting a job on Wall Street than I remember it being in 1978. But
well, one of the things I've noticed on this radio show, because I've been doing this for 26 years, is just recently guests, young and old, have been pulling out iPads and looking up things that they wrote in their books to quote themselves more accurately, something that we never had before.
Right.
One of the things that is quite different is that hardly anyone writes letters anymore, but letters are an important way for Mitchell and Madeline to communicate, and they remind us of another convention of the early novel.
The epistolary novel. It's true. I didn't really think about it while I was writing how different or how antique certain aspects of the book would seem to someone born in 1990. But we did write letters not so long ago, and I remember them, and I remember what it was like. You could still write this book and have it be texting or have it be email. You would just have to finesse it in a different way.
Everything would have to be kept to 144 characters.
That's just tweeting, though, which I don't know anything about, so I'm not going to venture there. But the essential anguish of this book, which is waiting for your lover to respond to you, that still happens. It happens when a stream of texts suddenly ends and the person doesn't write back to you. And it used to happen with waiting for letters. So I don't think it's really different in a kind, just in
this that they graduated from college, and we also go through their first year out of college, 1982, a time when the culture was shifting somewhat. It was the Reagan years. The economy was going through a rough time. There was still a Cold War. There were changing roles for women. These characters are all quite likable, but they still have to. That's another thing that you obviously wanted to do here. You didn't want to have any villains.
I at first thought that Leonard might be something of a villain. He's a difficult boyfriend. He's both the best boyfriend and the worst boyfriend you could have. But as I got to his section and began writing it, my sympathy for him expanded so much that the entire book changed in its structure. And I wasn't interested, you're right, in writing villains.
Well, if we're going to believe in Madeline, we're going to believe that she isn't going to fall in love with somebody who's totally bad. He has to have very positive qualities.
Yes, but I think he is both heroic at the end of the book, and I think you understand the difficulties of living with his illness by the time the book ends. At first, he was just going to be seen from the outside, and it's when I plunged into his mind that that the book really changed its color and its shape.
Well, it's been 9 years since you published Middlesex.
You keep mentioning
it. Well, I'm not the only one who's mentioned it, Jeffrey. Obviously, it went through all sorts of changes over that time.
Yes, I did.
So how many drafts did this go through?
Oh, well, first you have the book, 2 or 3 years that I boarded. Then this book took about 5 or 6 years to write. And depending on the section, it had many drafts or fewer. The hardest one and the one that took almost a year, even though it's only 40 pages, and it's embarrassing to admit how long it took, was the part in India, because I was competing with my own memories of the place and my own story, and I had to find the proper story for Mitchell. So that's what happened.
Well, I'm assuming that it's not going to take 9 years for me to see you again.
I hope not. I have a book of short stories almost finished, so there's two sort of done right now.
And
so
were you writing them you were working on this?
Yes, I've been publishing them in magazines little by little, and there's almost enough for a collection, so that'll be...
Do you engage in some kind of a dialogue between the short stories and the novel?
The short stories I wrote are written in the same vein as this. I went through a change in my style, and the voice of this, the third-person voice of this novel, bears a great resemblance to my story. So in a way, they were training exercises in order to write this book.
The Marriage Plot is Jeffrey Eugenides' latest book. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Thank you so much for being with
us
again.
Thank you. Nice to see you again.